Karen Bosch-Codd is the project advisor for the Pacific Library Partnership, as well as Veterans Connect at the Library. And whenever I hear those words, I think of the old saying, as California goes, so goes the nation. I bet you know that phrase, Karen. And originally, it was meant to acknowledge, you know, that California is a center of innovation and the rest of the country often imitates us. Lately, though, I think it's sometimes more of a lament or an expression of apprehension. But when I think of veterans resource centers and libraries, I think that is the original sentiment. That is something the rest of the nation should emulate. Can you just briefly explain what the Veterans Resource Center concept is, and also what is the impetus behind it even coming into existence, given that, you know, there are other segments of the population that libraries could choose to treat as special, but somebody made the decision to focus on veterans.
Right. That's right. So your first statement about as California goes, so goes the nation. I think that really was part of it, is because California has more veterans than any other state. And so we should be a leader in serving veterans. And I think that was probably part of the design. I wasn't involved in the original decision to serve veterans, but I gather there were some conversations between the California State Library and between the California Department of Veterans Affairs. And I think that the idea was lots of people go to the library. Of course, that includes veterans. And we always know that there are veterans who are eligible for benefits that they aren't collecting, or they might be eligible for services that they don't know anything about. So the thought was, well, let's have some services for veterans in libraries and see if we can't reach some veterans who might not be aware of some of the services that they received. And, you know, the other thing is libraries want to serve all kinds of different populations. I think in general, this population might not have been on our radar, but I believe over the last almost a decade, we've really raised interest in serving veterans.
Right. Do you think that libraries are in some way uniquely positioned to help veterans, as opposed to, you know, them going somewhere else for help?
Well, in somewhat, because I think libraries are trusted spaces. And people feel comfortable there. I mean, I've heard people say to me, veterans say to me, well, after I got out of the military, I was never going to go into a building with the flag. Yeah. You know, many libraries do have flags in front of them. But it was just kind of a testimony to the fact that there's a comfort level there that might, you know.
Yeah, I think that's probably a dig at the VA.
not necessarily.
Well, you know, as somebody who is a veteran service provider, you know, I hear a lot of complaints about the VA and sometimes compliments too. And I don't really, you know, rather than worry about it, I just try to help provide services.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Right. And that's why I think there have to be so many doors for veterans, because there are lots of ways for them to learn about the services. And so, you know, libraries are another door, and we're a referral door, you know, let people know about what things they might be eligible for, make connections. And that's our title, Veterans Connect at the Library. Make connections and get them to the people who can make a difference.
Yeah, well, I want to talk about the different kind of connections that can be made. But just to follow up on that point about the VA, the other thing is, even if somebody likes the VA, totally satisfied with it, the fact is that some veterans don't live near the VA. And it's not always convenient. So a library is often it's just a matter of convenience.
But I think that's your point. Practically every community has some little library.
Yeah. And not every community has a VA nearby. And it's definitely, libraries have, I guess they're sort of like fire departments, in the sense that hardly anybody hates firefighters, and I've never heard of anybody who doesn't like libraries. You know, they are very neutral, warm places. And, you know, in today's day and age, things are very polarized, of course. You know, the Democrats and the Republicans are at each other's throats. And it seems to me one thing that libraries and veterans have in common is that there's less polarizing, it's more of a unanimity as far as society embracing it without getting into these squabbles.
No, that's right. Libraries work really hard to be nonpartisan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a Veterans Resource Center. Now, I volunteered for, I guess, a couple of years at the Long Beach one, and we were in a conference room that was enclosed. I don't know if that's always the same, but for folks who aren't familiar with it, it's a certain period of time is dedicated each week or sometimes several days. I don't know how it varies from library to library as far as how many hours per week it's available and what kind of person staffs it.
So, there's 63 libraries involved in this project, mm-hmm. Jeff, and I'd say there's 63 different ways of doing this. Which is
all right. Why. Well, tell me 40 of them.
So the model really is that we recognize that the conversations with veterans might take a little bit more time than a standard question where you go to a reference desk and you say, I need 5 minutes of your time, or you think you have a question that takes 5 minutes, and that's all it takes. But these conversations with veterans are oftentimes more in depth because it involves taking a look at what are the services that they might be eligible for. And as you well know, as a veteran, everybody's had a different experience as a veteran. They served in different places and at different times. They're at different places in their lives. And so they what they need just varies so much. And so that's a real conversation. So we set up these centers and we staff them with volunteers like yourself, people who would learn about the services and spend some time talking with veterans. And, sometimes it took 5 minutes and sometimes it took 30 minutes or an hour. Sometimes they'd come back two or three times. So that was kind of the idea. And
what kind of person does it? I mean, is it sometimes? I mean, by the way, I don't blame you for assuming I'm a veteran, but actually, I'm not. So I have
Okay, all right.
Not the worst insult that I've. So that is actually one of my questions: do they tend to be veterans or not necessarily?
Well, I'd say probably more veterans than non-veterans, mm-hmm. because they have a certain passion for working with people, and veterans, they have this unique ability lots of times to recognize a veteran that non-veterans can't do. But I just made a mistake, so there you go. But see, I'm not a veteran. So
I've got all the scars behind me and the
cabinet. Yeah, look at you, yeah. So they sometimes have a kind of a unique ability. But the people that we've had, and I worked in libraries for really decades and decades, and worked with a lot of volunteers, and the volunteers in this program have been absolutely outstanding people. They've been so dedicated, and they bring so much information. They're really willing to work very hard to study the training that CalVet provides for the program and to attend the programs. They're super engaged. They have a lot of suggestions for staff. So. Right. It takes people who are super dedicated, and many of them have been involved for a long, long time.
Right. Yeah. On one hand, it does take dedication, but on the other hand, it's not particularly difficult to grasp the information. It's, as compared to other things where there's a learning curve and you struggle, mm-hmm. this is more, as somebody who's gone through it, I would say it's more like, just a decision to do it than it is difficult.
Yeah, and I think it takes some people skills though too, because people need to be able to make the veteran feel comfortable, to get the story so that you can figure out where in this possible scheme of benefits they might fit. And the volunteers, we really stress that the volunteers, as much as they know, they're never the experts. And so that's why people in the end need to go to their county veteran service officer or to the VA and talk about their benefits, because we don't want to miss anything. And and the library people are not, they can't say, well, you're eligible for this benefit. They say you might be eligible for this benefit, and then make that referral and then go, the county veteran service officer, the VA, is the person who makes the decision.
How has the pandemic affected the availability of services, and how have the folks at libraries adjusted to the circumstances?
So it's been an adjustment, and I think we're still in the adjustment stage. When it first hit, libraries closed like a lot of other institutions, and then And they certainly closed to volunteers. Even staff couldn't go into libraries, and so volunteers couldn't come into libraries. And sometimes those decisions were just risk management decisions, really, not because the libraries didn't want to have the volunteers there. And so as a result of that, some volunteers said, well, I'm not going to do this anymore, or I'm afraid, or I'm moving on in my life. So we lost volunteers, and we're still building up. But on the other hand, the other part of this program is that some of our libraries have work steady students, and most of them are VA work steady students, and they are another great group of people who have been volunteering for us, mostly because they came from the military. You don't have to be a veteran to be a VA work steady student, but you have to have some affiliation, you know, in your family.
Right. Well, did any of the libraries shift to doing it online?
Some people did online programs for veterans, and they had good responses with that. A lot of people gave out these this happened a lot in libraries. They gave out kits of. I want to show you what our bags. We have these bags. It's Veterans Connected to Library bags.
Oh, great.
So a lot of libraries made kits.
That's the website for you folks there, right?
Yeah, this is our website and our bright orange logo. And then, you know, they put in copies of this book, the Veteran Resource book. And this is the official CalVet resource book. It lists all the benefits that the state offers, you know, which are very rich in California, and also the federal things. And then they put in pamphlets from local veteran service agencies. And so this was popular alternative for us. And the libraries distributed these all different places, parks, sometimes at summer reading programs for kids. I mean, they just tried to be really creative with the distribution of those kits to keep people engaged.
Well, speaking of creative, I'm very focused on trying to expand the services or expand the, not even necessarily formally within the Veterans Resource Center, but just kind of making people aware of what libraries are like nowadays, because I think a lot of people of a certain age aren't even familiar with the modern library.
Yeah.
They aren't aware of all the potential there. What do you think could be accomplished at a library? You know, obviously it's the benefits, you know, that people have. I think that's the main focus is giving people counseling on benefits and certain conventional services. Have you thought about what else could possibly be accomplished in libraries?
For veterans, yeah, absolutely, yeah. And it has been these things have been accomplished at libraries. There have been situations where the library staff would hold a discussion group, say, about a book, or they'd have a poetry reading, or they'd have a journal writing session, or they'd put on some kind of other program for the whole community, including veterans, you know, to talk about what veterans have done and, you know, have these engagements in. And those programs, from the feedback that I've received, have been very powerful. You know, it's been opportunities for people to tell their stories, to share their stories. In some cases, it's been a healing process for veterans. It's been a chance for them to meet and talk with other veterans. So these things are super valuable, I think.
Now, the examples that you gave, were these set up to be specifically for veterans, or it was just something that veterans participated in along with non-veterans as well?
Well, both. I mean, some of the things that, like say it was a writing class, that might be just for veterans. It'd be depending on how the library thought it would be best to structure it. And lots of times they'd work with a group of people to find out what people wanted to do. You know, in some cases it was more like, well, let's get the community engaged. People in the community need to know more about what veterans have done.
Right. Now, I live in Long Beach, where we are blessed to have a very contemporary, I mean, not just contemporary, but brand new practically, library. And the facilities there are just tremendously impressive. They have a maker studio with 3D equipment, and they have a media studio with, you know, production equipment for video and audio, and all kinds of stuff like that. And I don't even know, actually, since I'm not a person who goes to a lot of different libraries, how unusual that is. Is that fairly typical nowadays, or Is that special at Long Beach SDU?
Yeah, a lot of libraries have really cool things like that, maker spaces, lots more emphasis on being a place where the community can meet, study rooms, all kinds of things. Right. Yeah, that's typical, but you're lucky to have a brand new library because, then you can showcase.
Yeah, and they're offering various. They're offering various STEAM programs too. Is that common too? For people who don't know, that's an acronym for science, technology, mm-hmm. engineering, arts, and
math.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, just that acronym alone kind of paints the picture about how much happens at libraries. If you think about that.
Yes.
Is that common too?
I think so. And I think the other trend that I see in libraries is this move to take the libraries out of the building and to go out into the communities. And of course, during COVID, libraries had to do that because people couldn't come into the building. So they would hold programs outside of their library, or they would go to parks or places where they thought people might be gathering. So, and that's a way to reach a whole different population. I know one of the Veteran Resource Centers there, they're always out at events and parks and parades and things like that. And libraries have done this kind of thing for a long time, but with COVID, I think there's been an emphasis on trying different things. But yeah, libraries are not the libraries of...
No, they're like, they're essentially community centers, not just a place to check out books, In fact, let me show you an example of what we did in Long Beach. Again, this is not like officially part of the Veterans Resource Center, but because I was there, I got to know them, and we had, we meaning my nonprofit, which is U.S. Tour of Duty, had a music program going, and we needed a place to rehearse, and they were kind enough. Just want to show a few seconds that you see, that's the old library, actually. They had a beautiful mm-hmm. theater there, so just having the opportunity to practice in a venue like that made these veterans feel so special, and that's the kind of thing that can happen just by showing up.
Yeah, that's right. You just got to ask, and if you've got an idea, I think you should propose it to your library and see what they have to say.
Yeah, they have meeting. I mean, I wish the new library had a theater. That was the old Long Beach library that they knocked down for the new one, and they don't have a theater now, but they do have meeting rooms, and I think just about every library has meeting rooms. And so you can do all kinds of things in a meeting room. It's not easy to get a nice meeting room for free. So, and you can at libraries. Right?
Yeah. And those meeting rooms are really nice for veteran organizations to have their meetings and things like that. And so I think that's worth asking.
So one of the partners with this program that we're talking about is BrainFuse, and they do online tutoring in general, but they have a special program for veterans. And I know you're a big proponent of BrainFuse. What can you tell us about BrainFuse?
So what happened was, BrainFuse isn't really a partner. I'd say they're a vendor. So what happened was when COVID first began, and we realized that people couldn't come into the library, then our state librarian, Greg Lucas, he purchased a subscription to BrainFuse, which is a program not just for veterans, it also has other components. But he thought that this would be a valuable resource for people who couldn't come to the library. And it is, it is a very rich resource. It does have a component for veterans. And there's a few things that I really like about this, it's called a database, but I really like about this is that one is it has a number of programs that help veterans who are looking for jobs convert their military resumes into civilian resumes. So it's got kind of a translation things. And I think there's about four different programs that will help you do that. Another thing that I like is that they will critique your resume. So you can submit your resume and have it critiqued. And if you had to pay somebody to do that, that would cost you a certain amount of money. So through your library, you could get this service for free. And then the final thing that I want to say is that they have a service where you can do a mock job interview. So if you feel like you're a little rusty on your skills for an interview, this is a good opportunity to see what kind of questions might be asked. Of course, you know, there's no guarantee that your employee is going to ask you those questions, but you know, there's this thinking on your feet and then getting some feedback, and this is all for free.
Yeah, well, in a way, the pandemic, I hate to say this because I know a lot of people had a very rough experiences, including loss of life, but in certain ways, it's been a blessing in disguise. You know, they say a necessity is the mother of invention, and some of these online services, I think, are worth sticking with us even post-pandemic, such as BrainFuse, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah, well, we'll just have to see, you know, what how the funding goes. But yeah, I think it's been a good resource for the state. And the other thing about BrainFuse that I liked is that it was available at every single branch in the state of California. So in California, we have I think 180 library jurisdictions. You know, those are different cities and counties. But we have 1,103 outlets, you know, if you count all the branches. So now, all of a sudden, through BrainFuse, that now every single library had access to these services for veterans. And I thought that was the beauty of the product.
I want to just get back before we close to the first point I was making, which is that I hope that the rest of the country imitates California. And I'm wondering whether or not my assumption is even correct, or maybe I'm just not aware of it. Is it really, in fact, unique as I think it is, or is this going on at all in other parts of the country?
You know, I don't know. It's hard to say. I certainly have never taken a poll. I've talked to different librarians in different states because they've been curious about what we're doing. This last year, for the first time ever that I know of, there was actually a national conference for libraries serving veterans, but it wasn't just public libraries, it was academic libraries and special libraries. And, you know, it was nice to be engaged with that group. You know, I think California should be very proud of what's happened here in terms of serving veterans. So,
yeah, I mean, I think it's the only state doing it. Certainly, there couldn't possibly be a lot, because I was fishing around the internet looking, and I didn't find much. Yeah. And so you mentioned that you've lost some of the volunteers, but are most of the libraries back open now, or it's not?
You know, I haven't done a poll, so I don't know. I think if people should just go and ask their library and find out what's open. I think libraries are open again, but whether or not they've been able to reestablish their services to veterans, or if they're still doing things online, you know, I just don't know. But but even if the Veteran Resource Center isn't open, they should still ask questions, because the staff is trained to help out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the whole idea, you know.
Absolutely.
From their military, as far as their veterans know how to go out and collect intelligence and seek information and ask questions.
So do librarians.
You're right. So they're a good match indeed. Yeah. What about your website? Is there anything there that you would direct people to go and take a look at the CalLibrariesForVeterans.org?
Well, so for anybody, there is a page there that is for veterans. And so we would encourage people to go to that page, because it has the list of the libraries and the locations that have the Veteran Resource Centers. So that's one thing. But also on the right-hand column, we have created a short list of very important websites, including CalVet websites and some VA websites that veterans typically might be using to get started.
Okay, and I was just flashing that on the screen for folks, and then there's the URL for BrainFuse as well. Well, great. Thanks so much, Karen, for talking with us, and thanks for all the work you do.
Well, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
And now we go to beautiful Whittier, California, and Rachel Fiore, a librarian at the Whittier Public Library. How you doing, Rachel?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm at the top of my game. I was just talking to Karen Bosch Cobb, who's in charge of all the Veterans Resource Centers at all 63 libraries throughout California that are offering this service, with Whittier being one of them. And Whittier is especially near and dear to my heart, because it's also the the flagship venue for our Intro to Podcasting workshop, which maybe we can touch on briefly a bit later. But let's start with the Veterans Resource Center. Just briefly, what exactly is the situation there? What are you offering, and what's the environment like when a veteran comes in seeking some sort of guidance?
Basically, we're a resource referral center. So, you know, someone comes in, they kind of don't know where to start with their either benefits or claims, or there's a variety of reasons they would come in. And they hear that we have this Veterans Resource Center, and they come in, and based on what they need, we might refer them to other services, or we have a veteran service officer that we can put them in touch with. But that's basically the starting point.
And what does it look like? I mean, is it a private room when the Veterans Resource Center is open?
Well, when we had our other location before the renovation, it was just a table in the corner with some temporary walls up. So it wasn't very private. Mm-hmm. Since the renovation started, we moved to our branch location. And over there, it's a table in the hallway, which is not ideal. But now with our new building coming in June 2022, we finally have like a private room. There's some glass we can see in, but it's very private. It's such an ideal setting for some of the sensitive topics that might come up, but just in general in the library, you know, everyone's not hearing your business.
Right. Yeah, that's important.
Yeah.
So how often is it open?
We used to be open 5 days a week, 10 to 2. And we have two shifts of veteran volunteers, 10 to 12 and then 12 to 2. Right now at our temporary location, it's just Wednesdays 10 to 12. And that's just until, you know, we can move back in and get to our full schedule. And we're very fortunate to have a lot of great volunteers. A lot of places don't have as many as we do. And so we're very fortunate that we can be open that much.
Well, what is there a particular goal as to how often you want to be open?
We definitely want to be open, you know, during the day hours as much as possible. And I think that 10 to 2 is a good chunk of time.
Right.
We've never had, and we have people who've come in after hours and,
yeah, what happens? Like, let's say a veteran comes in because they've heard there's a Veterans Resource Center there, but they happen to come in at a time when it's not open. What will they encounter if they, like, say, came up to you or another staff member?
Typically, they would probably be referred to the reference desk, and pretty much everyone on staff knows that it's myself and Diane Hara who run the Veterans Resource Center. So they know that anything that comes up, to just give it to us. And beyond, you know, if they came up to the reference desk and it was somebody else, they would just tell them the hours and the phone number they can call, or they would give them our specific numbers to call. But there's always something to give them, right. You know.
But if they come to you, do you try to give them any advice, or do you tend to just say come back when the Veterans Resource Center is up?
I definitely ask what they need, because maybe it's something I can just handle there. Maybe I can call the veteran service officer for them immediately, or it just depends on what it is.
Right.
And most of the time, it's going to be something that has to go to the veteran service officer. Okay. But at least we can tell them that part.
What is the what does it take to recruit volunteers, and what's the training process once you get a volunteer? You mentioned you have a great staff, so can you give us a sense of what that entails?
Yeah, we've actually been, again, very fortunate with our group, because when this Veterans Center started, I don't know if Karen mentioned anything about that, but we got the American Legion in on it right from the start. You know, we went to them and we talked to them about our center we wanted to start and volunteers, and from there they just recruited from their American Legion side, and then the same thing with the Whittier Lions. We went there, we talked to them about our Veteran Service Center and asked about volunteering, and that's where a majority of them come from. Some are just people that have walked in and have seen our center and want to help out. So there was
What about training them? What's involved in that?
As far as training, we pretty much sit them with one of the more senior people who've been there or the volunteers that have been there longer, and they just kind of shadow different people on different shifts and see the kind of questions that come up or the kind of scenarios they need to know about. But basically in that scenario, you have to sit and be a part of it and listen and, you know.
Right. I was talking to Karen about this. You know, I've been a volunteer myself at the Long Beach Veterans Resource Center, and I was saying that, I mean, it requires a certain degree of commitment, but if you are truly committed, it's not like it's particularly difficult to grasp. Right. You know, it's the nuts and bolts. You just have to familiarize yourself with, you know, some of the services and how to contact people. And Karen mentioned it certainly helps to have people skills too.
Yeah.
We're going to talk to Wes Murray, one of your volunteers, in a little while. So he's a veteran too.
Yes, and he's had a lot of he's been in that center longer than I've been here, so he has a lot of knowledge and probably a few stories even to share about some of the things he's encountered.
Great. So other than the Veterans Resource Center, what's different about libraries nowadays that somebody who hasn't been in a library for a long time might be surprised to discover?
That's a great question. I think the amount of things they offer beyond that, as far as, let's say, you know, beyond books, ebooks, audiobooks, that type of thing, we're starting to incorporate, we have Kindles to check out, we have ukuleles to check out, we have, we're starting to get some Chromebooks that you can check out with a hotspot if you didn't have internet at home. That's some of the more recent things that we've been adding. We've been doing passports for a long time. A lot of people don't know about that. Of course, our Veterans Resource Center.
I didn't know about passports. That's convenient.
Yeah, and we're one of the few libraries
that
has that.
What about DMV registrations? I recently had to do that, and I was confronted with a line that went on for days at the Department of Motor Vehicles, and then somebody told me, the AAA does that. It's like,
oh. Exactly. It's similar to that. Like, we have a service that no one thought of that. It really does. It's easy to make an appointment.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if you've thought about this. This might just be like my own fantasy, but since bookstores have been going out of business for the last few years, there's a void that needs to be filled. And it seems to me libraries are very well positioned to do that. There's obviously the literary, the books and all that, but also I kind of see libraries as community centers now. I mean, most libraries have meeting rooms and so forth. I don't know if any libraries have, coffee or food like they had at some bookstores, but that's about the only thing missing. Do you see libraries sort of as a community center also that can kind of fill the void of bookstores?
Yeah, I think so. We definitely do a lot of programming, and with that programming, we have rooms set up for it, community rooms. And we almost always have food, snacks, beverages to go with those programs. We wouldn't have that kind of thing outside of, you know, it being connected to a program.
Right.
But we definitely have, you know, you can sort of rent the room out or have a program through the library or author talks. We've had chefs come and do demonstrations. I mean, just such a wide variety. So in my mind, I think that's what you're talking about a little bit. I think that's what you're...
Yeah, I think so. I think those are the elements right there. There's events. There's, you know, there's obviously authors come in and people gather. And it's not just like, the library's a place to be totally quiet and just check out a book. That's how it was when I was a kid growing up. You know, you don't talk in the library.
I mean, that's definitely still applies, you know, when you're in the library out in the open. But that's why we have all these nice rooms now, you know, study rooms or community rooms where we can have these events without disturbing the main library.
Yeah. Well, I bet you're looking forward to that new library opening in June.
Yes.
And, we should mention to folks that we are offering a intro to podcasting workshop. And it's absolutely free to veterans and their allies, and anybody who's interested in establishing the skills necessary to do their own podcast or participate in ours are welcome to do so. Let's see if we can get that on the screen there. Maybe we can both be on. I think there's a way to do that. No, I guess there's not. So that's an example of how the a library can offer something just besides the normal services. I would imagine it's mostly about people wanting to know about their VA benefits and what services are available. But here's an example of something that's a bit out of the ordinary. And so I salute you for doing that with us. What do you think the interest is going to be in this? Do you think many people would be interested in learning how to do their own podcast?
I definitely think this, I was going to say that too. This is definitely something that are offering through you that has been an added benefit of something that, you know, people are starting to see maybe in libraries a bit more, the podcasting. But I think it would definitely interest a lot of younger people for sure. Maybe not as much as our World War II Vietnam veterans, but they're definitely interested in participating in, like we're doing today, the interviews and things like that. But there's definitely been a growing interest in podcasts in general that we've seen in our community.
So anybody who might be interested in signing up or just getting more info can go to ustouroftoduty.org. So that's the kind of thing that I want to encourage through this podcast and any other way we can think of, is to just think creatively about what can be done with veterans and look at libraries as a nerve center. Mm-hmm. And one of the quotes that has been a great source of inspiration, it was something that I was thinking about for a long time, but recently I discovered a quote by Thucydides, who is a Greek historian and general. "The society that separates its scholars from its warriors will have its thinking done by cowards and its fighting by fools." And I don't know if that resonates for you, but I was thinking that really encapsulates the potential for a great relationship between librarians and veterans, because it seems to me what that means is that it's about being very well balanced, effective, and powerful. Because on one hand, you want to be brave and know how to deal with aggression, mm-hmm. but on the other hand, you want to be tempered by knowledge and know when and how to use it. So does that resonate for you at all as a librarian?
It does, and more so in the past probably over 5 years, it definitely resonates a lot more for sure. I definitely see the overlap between that.
Yeah. I don't want to generalize. Maybe you go out and work as a bouncer on weekends at night, because maybe you do a lot of physical stuff. But in general, I think librarians, you know, are on the scholarly end, and there's an aspect of veterans, too, that, you know, they appreciate that. A lot of generals are really quite brilliant scholars. You know, your regular enlisted men and women certainly understand the importance of doing research. That, you know, they call it going out collecting intelligence. Mm-hmm. And they're very, you know, especially like if they're in a combat situation, they understand that they're isolated and they don't necessarily see the big picture. So they need to interact with people. And so I see this as sort of the civilian equivalent of that kind of relationship where, you know, even though they're out in the civilian world now and they're not as isolated, nobody is connected to everything. So to have that kind of mindset available in libraries, I think is going to be a great asset.
Absolutely. And I do think it's a good, an important relationship too between veterans and libraries. And yeah, I think that's really important.
All right. Well, thanks for chatting with us. Let's see if Wes is around and we'll talk to him as well. Just to go over one more time, that's Wednesdays from noon to, no, from 10, what is it?
10 to 12.
Oh, 10 to 12. Okay,
10 to 12. Yeah. Wednesdays, 10 to 12.
Okay. And the podcasting workshop, we got some initial funding just to get the ball rolling from the U.S. Institute of Museum and Library Services. So we want to thank them for their support.
Yes.
And we will see you soon in Whittier. Thanks, Rachel.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay. And now we go to a man who's on the front lines, Wes Murray, who is one of the volunteers at the Whittier Library. And Wes, the rumor is you're an Air Force veteran. Is that correct?
That's correct. I spent about 5.5 years in the Air Force. I was a B-52 navigator. As the saying goes, sometimes I told the pilots where to go.
Well, I'm sure that helps you relate to the veterans who come in and want to talk.
Absolutely.
Do you think it's necessary, though, or do you think that a volunteer who's not a veteran could be pretty helpful also?
I think it helps to talk to the veterans. When I look at my military experience, long story, I try to make it as short as possible or as detailed as possible or whatever.
Well, those are two opposites, Wes. Is it going to be as short as possible?
I know. I'm going to work back and forth on this one. Right. So anyway, I graduated from college in 1961, and I got a nice job as a YMCA boys director just east of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And in the election that took place for president in 1961, JFK was elected president. In his first State of the Union address in January of 1962, he made his famous statement of ask not what the country can do for you, but what you can do for the country. And the world was reasonably peaceful at that time, but having had a deferment when I was in college, I did not want to be an enlisted man in the Army. So I talked to the Air Force and they said, hey, you've got a degree, you qualify to be an officer. And so I said, that sounds fair. They said, well, you're gonna have to take some tests. So I took a number of tests and I qualified to be a navigator. And if you remember back in 1962, computers were just beginning and computers filled rooms and rooms and rooms. And I was going to be up in an airplane. And what can I tell you? Ultimately, when I got through all the different classes I had to do, the different programs, I ended up being a B-52 navigator flying out of South Dakota. And our way of keeping the plane on course, on time, was to use a sextant to shoot the sun and the stars to find, to keep us on track and on course.
Well, you have a lot to say. I just had a thought while you were talking. Are you aware of the intro to podcasting workshop that we're offering?
Not the introduction, no.
Oh, well, basically we're doing a workshop that teaches people how to create content for podcasts.
Okay.
And we are doing our own podcast, which we're doing right now. So we should talk about including you on at least an occasional basis instead of just this, because I can tell you have a lot to say. So let's talk about that offline and see if you might be interested in that.
Working through Rachel, we can make that happen.
Okay, great. So what kind of questions or types of problems do you most frequently get from veterans who come into the resource center?
It varies, of course, depending on the age of the veteran. Mm-hmm. But many times, the older veterans, it's, I have hearing problems, what can I do, and who can I talk to, where can I go? Mm-hmm. For some veterans here in California, it's, I want to get my license with my driver's license, indicating that, hey, I am a veteran, and that gives me additional resources. Who do I talk to? How do I do that? Who can help me do that? Some of the times, it's the fact that there's severe PTSD, and that's something I think we're going to be dealing with here in the near future, given what's happening in the Ukraine, various issues like that. And then site issues and general health, and occasionally we get in people who are looking for my husband's passing away, my husband's dying, he's a veteran, what kind of services are there, where can he be buried, all things like that.
Right. It sounds like quite a variety.
Has
anything surprised you as far as what type of needs veterans have?
In a way, but it goes back into history. In terms of one person that came in who was a World War II veteran, and the fact that here it is, I've only seen him probably about 3-4 years ago, so in the 2010s, maybe even 2020, who was a veteran in the World War II, who was still suffering from PTSD from his experience when overseas.
How do you handle it if somebody asks you a question that you don't immediately have the answer to?
In many ways, it depends on what the question is. Mm-hmm. For example, if it's a driver's license, then we can give them, and we, one of our people that volunteer at the center has put together a really good notebook of resources and where to go. We can refer to that notebook and give them the information, whether it's a in-person location or a website or a phone number. If it's health-related, hearing or sight-related, then we can direct them and give them guidance to go to the VA and one of the local offices, possibly to start the process, and then down to Long Beach where they can get full service.
Right. Of course, there's a lot of different feelings that people have about the VA.
yes.
And I'm curious, can you give me some approximation as to what percentage of the veterans come in to see you because they don't like the VA versus, well, maybe it's just more convenient?
That's a good question. Mm-hmm. With older veterans, they tend to come in because of the previous history of VA in terms of their response, in terms of how they were not as helpful to veterans or open to veterans as they are now. With the younger veterans, that's not the case. And they do like the VA, and they're really willing to contact them and work through whatever level they need to do.
Right. So you're in Whittier, which is, people who live in the Whittier area aren't too far away from any VA. And in other parts of the country, though, you know, sometimes people don't live all that close. So I could see where libraries, in some cases, are kind of a lifesaver because it's just not too practical for the veteran to get to the VA. But still, even somebody who doesn't have a car, who lives even in our area here, they might find it more convenient to go to the library, I would think.
Absolutely. And speaking of that issue, one of the service clubs here in the city of Whittier has given a grant to the Veterans Resource Center of, I think, about $500 to provide emergency funds for people that don't have vehicles, to get enough funds to get bus fare or transportation fare from Whittier to the VA or where they may need to go.
Oh, I love to hear that because, you know, I'm a big proponent of like broadening the services because there's so many different ways, if we're just creative about
yes.
it, that we can fill their needs. Let me just show you real briefly. I was showing this to Karen Bosch Cobb, who oversees all the Veterans Resource Centers throughout California. I was a volunteer in Long Beach, and that library was just knocked down. They used to have a theater there. That's the theater in the old Long Beach Library. And we had a band going where veterans needed a rehearsal space, and they let us use that. So I just want to plant that thought in your mind. That happens to be a lot of what we do at U.S. Tour of Duty are arts oriented, sometimes with music, sometimes with comedy, sometimes video production, podcasting, whatever it might be. So please keep that in mind when you are interacting with the veterans who come in. If you meet musicians or anything like that, I don't know if you've thought about this very much, but often it's very therapeutic for veterans to get involved in some of these arts-oriented projects.
Absolutely, absolutely. And some of the forms of art that have been displayed in Whittier by veterans is just really incredible. We're in the process. I serve on a committee here for the city called Art in Public Places, where we are developing a memorial to Jose Ramos, who founded Welcome Home Vietnam Veterans, and we are doing it in one of our major parks, where there will be he bicycled from Whittier to Washington D.C. and back a number of times, and we are displaying his experience and what he did for the veterans. So yes, I like the idea of a band of art, of music, of maybe writing, a veteran that likes to write novels, in terms of really recognizing that. Yes, absolutely.
Oh, good. I'm glad you appreciate that. I know a lot of veterans, you know, whether it's due to pride or due to, you know, the male veterans' machismo, sometimes they aren't so eager to admit they need help. So yes. Sometimes just getting them involved in something that's therapeutic without them thinking about it as, like, you know, mental health per se, yet it has that purpose. So that's
absolutely, absolutely. And I have seen that through my life in terms of what that is. If I can just add to that, one of the things, and maybe we'll talk about some of the details later, but I flew 6 months worth of missions over Southeast Asia in a B-52, where each aircraft carried 108 500-pound bombs. And if you think of the damage a single aircraft did, we were flying in waves of 3, 6, 9, 12, sometimes 15 aircraft against the same target. And what the after-action photos showed in terms of this great golf course that we built in the area, in terms of that set me off in terms of saying, what do I want to do after getting out of the Air Force? And I ended up going back to grad school in at the University of Pennsylvania, where I got a degree in landscape architecture, urban planning. And then my career has followed that with those thoughts and those images still on my mind as I work through my life on that.
Oh, that's very interesting that you would say that, because are you familiar with the villages at Cabrillo by any chance in London?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
So tomorrow I'm going to be interviewing the senior vice president of Century Villages, which is the organization that runs that facility. And one of the questions I have for him is, why isn't there more of this? So now that you've just shared with me what your expertise and passion is, I wonder if you might have any thoughts about that. Because to me, the value is combining housing with services. And of course, you need the right space and it needs to be funded and all that. But as somebody with expertise in urban planning, is that something that you think is feasible and could be duplicated?
It could be, and one of the things that is probably needed, and especially when you're dealing with veterans, is there needs to be some common spaces where veterans, individuals, or families can come and share, just sitting there, a barbecue, whatever it is, so that there's interaction between various veterans who can find a way of talking about some of their experiences. And again, relating to what's going on in the world now, I got a feeling a lot of veterans, especially from the Afghanistan war and local recent wars, are going to see images in their mind of this. And who do they talk to? Where do they find a close by relationship of people who they can share their experiences with without putting themselves feeling like they're, you know, out there just jabbering and just you know, making everybody feel bad?
Right. Now, is your expertise more in the realm of design, or does it also encompass dealing with political realities and funding and things like that as well?
My training was in the first. I sit on any number. Over the last 30 plus years, I have been on the Planning Commission here in Whittier for over 15 years. I'm on a group called Design Review Board, which looks at the design of spaces, which leads into an approval of that committee. The plans go up to the Planning Commission. I sit on design, our art and public places, any number of things that I'm working at a political level, but the physical design, the ecological design of what is involved is always on, also on my always on my mind.
So these projects you were just mentioning, is that pretty much all in Whittier or in other areas too?
At this point, it is currently in the city of Whittier. I retired about 15, 20 years ago. So up until that time, it was nationally, and I did a few international projects, but it's been national in terms of the.
Is there anything in the works that might be comparable to the villages at Cabrillo that is in the process of developing there in Whittier? Or is that anything you've ever thought about?
I don't know what is on the table in the planning process, I know that we have recently seen a number of potential developments ranging in number from maybe 10 houses up to 25, 30 units. I shouldn't say houses, let's say units, in terms of how they mix, how they provide community space and all the rest of it. We have now building out, it's taken a few years to do it, but an old school for delinquent children that has been taken over by a developer and is now developing a nice mixed unit of residential, of commercial, of any number of things. And they have designed some really nice communal spaces in some of their higher density areas with, in fact, two of the areas, I think it's two, has a nice outside barbecue made out of blocks, and it's really great, and it's well paved, and it's really accessible to this, and it's going to be neat to see how that is used.
All right, well, great. Well, I'm so glad we had this opportunity to get acquainted with each other, and I'm glad to hear that you're a guy who's not just a by-the-books guy doing the obvious, and you're open to more creative endeavors, so maybe we can collaborate on something like this.
It needs to be creative in terms of looking at the environment. And we in California now, with the changes that the state is making in terms of zoning laws and the number of units, additional dwelling unit kind of things, we're going to have to be very creative in terms of how we deal with that and create livable private spaces, but also spaces that relate to the larger community.
Well, thank you not only for your military service, but for applying that mindset to the civilian sector as well. I salute you.
Glad to do it. Thank you very much.
Okay, Wes, thank you.
Thank you.